And here's a little bit of Theratech blues for you, Michael.
That breaks me up.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loff.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast. This is Michael Loff.
I'm Ricky Inger.
Mike Calvo.
This is Jeff Bishop here in rainy Arizona.
Based on a user request, Mike Calvo is going to do a demo of the Tassimo. This is a little Bosch coffee maker. You can hear it in action and find out how quickly you can get your jolt of caffeine. Also, we're going to take an abbreviated look at the new Moshi talking voice-activated alarm clock. And the main topic that we're going to hit later, radio stations and music portals online. So if you're looking for radio and music sites, this is going to be the podcast for you to listen to.
Jeff, of course, is former host of ACB's Main Menu. The show is just not the same without you, Jeff.
Well, it's different. It doesn't have the Main Menu live aspect. I think a lot of its interactivity has been taken away from it. It required a lot of effort to do that. But the new team is doing well. They're producing quite a bit of content. I see they're running quite a bit of material that was available elsewhere over the holidays, which is good because that's always a slow time of the year. But they put up some good content, and it's good to see more people contributing. That was the biggest thing. We had a great time getting guests. Getting people to actually contribute other material was sometimes rather difficult. And I'm glad to see there's quite a number of really young people involved, and that's really striving to push some content and stuff. So I'm glad to see that, and I'm glad to see that it's continuing. One of the things that I feared was that potentially it might have dissipated, but it appears to be going strong. I've even told them that, you know, on occasion I'd be happy to contribute.
So, Jeff, what are you getting for Christmas?
We really love this Netflix service. It has a lot of older content, you know, like the whole old Knight Rider shows. With Netflix, you have to watch them on the computer, or you can get DVDs and get them in the mail. A lot of the content that we like is already in their instant queue. We talked as a family and we said, do we want to get individual gifts for the family or do we want to get one big gift for Christmas for the entire family? And we all decided that we would like to get one gift. What we ended up getting was an Xbox 360 from Dell for $249.
The only downside, though, to using the Xbox 360 with the Netflix versus using like a Roku or one of the other devices is that you have to have the $50 a year plan.
Now, the interesting thing about Netflix, though, is that they just pulled a lot of their Sony movies off of Netflix on their instant queue. The really cool thing about the Xbox is you can stream your media content, just like you can with System Access, of course, but you can stream it on the Xbox. You can have multiple media libraries on it as well. So we have music on my machine, of course, and we have music on the kids' machine, we have music on Carrie's machine. We're huge Christmas music fans here in this house.
Now, wouldn't it be neat if an enterprising company in the AT industry made that accessible?
Now, wouldn't it, though? Now, Windows Media Center, of course, is accessible from a standpoint that you can access entertainment.msn.com. You can actually schedule recordings of TV programs through your Media Center through the MSN Entertainment portal. So you can be at work, for example, and you can go up and go, oh, Frosty the Snowman's on tonight. I want to watch that, so I'm going to go up and I'm going to record it, and I'll come home and I'll watch it on my Media Center device. The neat thing about that is that the Xbox 360 does support Vista, meaning that you can treat the Xbox as a Media Center type device.
There are some limitations in the way that it accesses. So, for example, it logs on as a client, and the interesting thing about the Xbox is that it only allows you to run one program at a time. You can't have a screen reader running on the Xbox. The only way that you'd be able to do it is if you had something on the PC sending back the information, which is conceivable. I mean, and it's something that we've definitely looked at and we've talked to Microsoft about a little bit. We're really waiting. I mean, if the community is interested in the Xbox being accessible, I think that it needs to get involved at Microsoft Accessibility and really let them know that there's a demand. And that's exactly the purpose of this podcast, is to inform us as blind people what is available, what's out there, and what isn't out there but would be really cool if it was accessible. And we don't need to be mean about it. We don't need to yell and scream, well, you know, you don't want us to be your customers. A lot of these companies just don't know. I'm certainly not saying that Microsoft is naive to the needs of the blind community, but in this particular case, I know that when I spoke to the Xbox 360 team in Redmond a while back, they were quite surprised that blind people would even be interested in accessing a game device. So again, this is something where I think that blind gamers and just consumers at large that really are interested in multiple points of access for their media and things of that nature really need to go to Microsoft and say, listen, build it and we will come.
I used to work for Microsoft, and really, Microsoft is so huge that a lot of times they're just not aware of what people are going to use their product. When I started to work in the Access group, I called them up and said, listen, I'm a support analyst for Access, and you have some accessibility issues here. And they flew me to Redmond, and I worked with Howie Dickerman and those guys. He's a great, great guy, and he actually worked on the Messenger team and then went over to Office, and one of the champions within Microsoft that really did a lot for accessibility.
Really want to hear from everyone on this issue. Email us with topics you want to see us cover to how you can get involved in lobbying for greater accessibility. So please contact us. Email resources@cerotalk.com or call the Blab line at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. Nice effect.
A little echo on that.
That's not me on the actual Blab line, just in case anyone's wondering.
We got to get a couple of girls going blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, it's stereo. And we can have our own podcast, the Blabettes. Yeah.
The Blabettes.
It'll be a sort of a spinoff podcast.
Ray Charles had the Raylettes. Why not?
Right. Exactly.
Jeff, you've been looking at Mobile Geo, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I was a beta tester for it, and I got a chance to play with it a little bit, but a product like that is hard to really test real aggressively. Plus, the beta went really fast. From the time that the beta started to the time that it actually released was very, very quick. I'm interested in potentially purchasing it, and I just wanted to see what you guys were thinking. There's a few things about Mobile Geo that are very intriguing. First of all, I already have a phone that has Mobile Speak on it, and I have a phone that will run Mobile Geo on it. And getting a GPS receiver is nothing. I mean, you can get them for $30, $40 these days, and they're small.
The phones have receivers built in. A lot of people want to harness that, but I guess there's some downsides to battery life and just quality of
coverage. Well, they're not very accurate
either. The reception is pretty poor.
You're buying a phone. You're not buying a GPS receiver.
I actually was also a tester.
I was as well.
I did not find the product to be compelling enough for me to go and whip out $800 or $900 for a piece of software for a mobile device. I was quite disappointed in the fact that Sendero Group and Code Factory were unable to come to an agreement on the cost of the technology to bring it to a price where the average consumer could get this product without having to break the bank. They've created yet another blind ghetto product that is overpriced. In the mainstream, you can go out and get a Garmin for $300.
Well, exactly. Yeah, you have Mobile Speak for $299. You've got Wavefinder. Those of us with the Symbian can use. I think it's around $280, $285. I don't understand the price point there.
Mike May is a wonderful person, but it has to do with the Sendero Group and the cost of their technology and their GPS technologies that were originally made for the blind ghetto products like the Braille Note and the Empower. These guys got to get it through their heads that that is over. That idea of being able to rob and pillage the blind market for thousands of dollars for one device has got to end. There are millions of blind people out there that can't afford these devices, and if they were to come back down to normal pricing where people could actually pay for them, I think that their markets would grow substantially.
They have these initial startup costs that they need to recoup, and then like all new technologies, they start out and price comes down as it becomes deployed by the masses. Companies need to understand price point.
I think the product itself is wonderful, but I sort of resent the idea of having to spend more than my sighted counterparts. A lot of cars come pre-installed with GPS, or you get the TomTom or the Garmin, very cheap. I want to pay that same price and have the same functionality.
Present the other side, that's the excitement of the accessibility. I talked to two guys who were traveling in Indianapolis. Very excited, they turned onto a new street, and within three paces, knew what street they were on, and how liberated they felt by that. How they felt safer when traveling by knowing where they are.
Oh, no, dude, listen, the product works. Both companies, Code Factory and Sendero Group, are both leaders in what they do. There's no doubt about it.
Mike, do you think we're going to again see a situation where prices will not come down? In every other industry, prices go down. In our industry, they tend to just go up.
I don't know. I know the management at Code Factory well. I know that their hearts always have been for giving blind consumers low-cost devices, low-cost access, and choice of device. This particular product, while very intriguing and very cool and actually works pretty well, is so out of their pricing paradigm that I couldn't even begin to say what the future of it holds. Even the beta testers were given 30% discount or 40% discount on the price of the product, but even that is exorbitant. I mean, it's 500 and some odd bucks. And then you need a smartphone, and then you need their screen reader
mobile
product.
Speaker.
Dude,
yeah.
You're talking $1,400, $1,500. We're getting up there into KNFB Reader territory. KNFB Reader, which is an excellent product. It does what they say it does. But the fact is that it's a $1,900 cell phone, man. A Mercedes drives really nice, too, but it's a little out of my price range.
Mike, if you look at other products, like the Breeze, for example, the Trekker Breeze, $600 is, or $800 is a pretty good price point if, this is a big if you already have the phone because you want to have a phone.
First of all, the Trekker Breeze has a very limited scope of market because the Trekker Breeze is one of these things that, for example, you would give to a college student going around a university and needs some directions, and you can pre-map it. The Trekker Breeze only takes the points that you give to it. The Trekker Breeze, I can see it, for example, you go to Disney World, and the few blind people that go to Disney World every year, they go and they rent this thing, and as they're walking by the haunted house, it says haunted house. I can dig that. That's not for everybody. But Mobile Geo, on the other hand, everybody can use this. There's not one person that is not upwardly mobile that cannot benefit from this product.
But HumanWare's marketing the Breeze for everybody, though.
Think about that for a minute. As a blind person, you're going to take your Trekker Breeze, and you're going to have somebody walk the walk with you first. So, honey, walk me down to the grocery store so I can program my Trekker Breeze to know the way.
Nah. All of these products are so astronomically high that a lot of them are out of reach, and I'm not really sure that we have a lot of choice.
I really think that $300, even if it's in a bundle, go to Handango.com or any of these sites. Man. See how many $600 mobile applications there are sitting on their website, and that's just what bothers me.
Look at screen readers, though, Mike. It's the same thing. Why should we have to spend, and this gets right back to your pricing model.
Don't get me started.
I mean, it's exactly the same.
We only have 45 minutes in the podcast.
Listen, when you're born, the doctor says, oh, he's blind. You go, oh, great. That means any technology is 10 times as much. I do think that what Mobile Geo provides and what it does, I mean, I had a great opportunity a couple of weeks ago to really play with it pretty extensively out of its beta form, and it's pretty intriguing.
Oh, no, it rocks.
It's great.
From a technological standpoint, hey, listen, Code Factory, Sendero, you get a thumbs up from the Serotalk crew. Woo!
Yay!
From the pricing point, sucks.
Well, honestly, the whole AT industry pricing model stinks.
Speaking of this mobility, brings me to what I want for my birthday's on the 28th of December. I will be 41 this year.
Yay! Hey. Happy 41th birthday.
41th,
yes.
Indeed.
41th.
So what I want, because I travel a lot for my job, and I'm always going through airports, and I carry a laptop or two with me, and they're always, sir, would you please take that out, put that in the tray? What I really want is, Tom Bin makes these awesome bags, and Bin is spelled B-I-H-N, so it's tombihn.com, the Checkpoint Flyer bag. And the cool thing about this bag is they claim on the website within 3 seconds you can have it open and ready to just go through the x-ray machine. And while that doesn't seem, you know, like a lot, 30 or 40 seconds to take your laptop out of your bag and put it in the case, there's a lot that goes on there. What if they drop it? The bag is a little costly at $220.
Wow.
Yeah, but these bags are beautiful. I mean, they are works of art. They're just made for the road warrior professional. And then they've got another thing you can add on to it. They've got the shoulder strap that even if you bend down or whatever, the shoulder strap, it won't fall off your shoulder. I mean, how many times are you trying to carry your laptop bag, drag your suitcase, have your guide dog in your other hand, and your darn bag just keeps slipping off your shoulder.
How much space is in this thing? Is it for netbooks? Is it for, you know, big 17-inch?
As small as 13-inch all the way up to 17-inch. Again, it's not the cheapest bag. There are other checkpoint-friendly bags available, but Tombin seems to be just one of the staples of the Road Warrior. It's a great bag. It's really solid made. It's made here in America. They're great bags. A gift that'll keep on giving because it makes travel a whole lot better. See that at tombin.com, or you can see the video on our show notes or on my Facebook page. I carry a couple of netbooks when I travel because of demos and things like that, and I always get stopped. I can always count on at least a 15 or 20 minute questioning session and being wanded and everything else.
Is
when
that because
I go
of
down.
The electronics or because of the dog or both?
Yeah, everything. About. I finally got it down to a science with the dog where the dog waits on the other side for me. I walk through so they see that I don't beep. And then the dog walks through and they see he beeps and they come and they touch him even though he's in harness.
In the future, you may not have to pull out any of your devices. Just stop for a second or two and they see everything you have.
Well, I don't understand why they can't do that
now. The problem, Jeff, is the technology literally not only sees through or inside your devices, but can also see inside your body at 30 feet away. Now,
that's a little bit disturbing.
Yes, very disturbing.
Your internal organs and your laptop have both passed inspection.
Well, I guess contraband in an orifice or something? No longer.
There is that, yeah.
Can you imagine? By the way, sir, you have an enlarged liver.
Get a really nice laptop bag. And of course, we as blind folks, we usually have a little more maybe assistance from airport personnel. But a lot of folks actually want to obscure the fact that they have a laptop and put it in some kind of bag where it doesn't stand out as a laptop device and maybe less likely to be stolen.
It's just a big mess. Dems is the breaks of traveling. This is why virtual is so important.
Well, we are going to have to wrap this up.
So anyway, so it's been great to have you here, Jeff. Are you blogging these days? Or are you not blogging?
I am not. I've been doing quite a bit of scripting work. But I'm on Twitter. Yeah, I'm on Twitter, and I tweet occasionally.
There's two ways to use Twitter. You can use it to find out when your friends are going to bed and that they're having coffee at 10:30 they slept in.
The important stuff.
Or, right, you can use it to follow news, and that's what I'm doing.
You're doing window eye scripting nowadays?
Yeah, I'm doing quite a bit of that. And work's been keeping me really busy learning new development languages and things. But I'm on vacation now until the 6th, and then I go get my new guide dog the weekend of January 17th in Oregon.
Good luck in your endeavors. The scripting for the new Window Eyes is awesome from what I hear. I'm looking forward
to
hearing
some scripts.
Michael is a Window Eyes user, a System Access user, of course.
Yep, so he's got several tools and uses the one that's appropriate for the task.
Fine time that there's a new scripter in town. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for visiting with us. We hope to speak to you soon.
All right. Take care, guys.
Hi, everybody. This is the Isle of Techie Steve from Independent Living Aid Soundbites. We're talking today about the Moshi voice-controlled talking alarm clock. Hello, Moshi.
Welcome. Command, please.
Time.
The time is 12:05 p.m.
Hello, Moshi.
Command, please.
Set time.
Tell me the current time.
12:06 p.m.
The time is now set to 12:06 p.m.
Hello, Moshi.
Command, please.
Set alarm.
Tell me the time you want the alarm to sound.
5:30 a.m.
The alarm is now set to 5:30 a.m.
Hello, Moshi.
Command, please.
Alarm.
The alarm is set to 5:30 a.m. The alarm is on.
Hello, Moshi.
Command, please.
Alarm sound.
To choose an alarm sound, say alarm 1, alarm 2, or alarm 3.
Alarm 1. Hello, Moshi.
Welcome. Command, please.
Sleep sounds.
To choose a sleep sound, say sound 1, sound 2, or sound 3.
Sound 1. Hello, Moshi.
Command, please.
Play sleep sound. All you have to do is reach over and touch the clock itself, and it shuts off. You can turn off your alarm sound at some point with your voice. With the alarm sound, if you touch the clock, it will snooze for 9 minutes. Incidentally, the alarm sounds will also ascend in sound level as it starts up. Hello, Moshi.
Welcome. Command, please.
Today's date.
Today is Wednesday, November 26, 2008.
Hello, Moshi.
Command, please.
Temperature.
The temperature is 75 degrees Fahrenheit.
Hello, Moshi.
Welcome. Command, please.
Nightlight. So now the nightlight is on. If I said it again, it would be off. Hello, Moshi.
Command, please.
Help.
You can say time. Set time. Alarm. Set alarm. Alarm sound. Sleep sound. Play sleep sound. Today's date. Temperature. Nightlight. Or help. In between the alarm, say, turn off the alarm.
If you get an error message, you'll hear this.
Sorry, I didn't recognize your command.
Cancel. The Moshi voice-controlled talking alarm clock. It's item number 247519. The price of that is $49.95 plus shipping and handling. Check it out by visiting www.independentliving.com. 1-800-537-2118.
All right, it's time for the main event. Each podcast, we have a main theme, and then we include a few other features in case that theme doesn't interest you. This episode, we are covering radio and music websites on the internet. If you like listening to thousands of radio stations throughout the world, or maybe you like the new form of radio, which includes music sites where you can kind of customize your own radio station. We've got it all for you, and we're going to speak with a number of different people, give you their input, and then I'll conclude with an overview of all of the sites that I am currently aware of, or most of the sites anyway, in the areas of radio, music, amateur radio, satellite radio, podcasts, and a few other surprises. So enjoy. Maybe take some notes, or better yet, what we'd like you to do is just bookmark and go to serotalk.com, serotalk.com, and there are links to everything that is mentioned here today. Let's start with the lovely Jedi in Washington State. What do you do on the internet for entertainment?
I really enjoy keeping tabs on friends with lifejournal.com. It's a very dynamic blog, and it's extremely navigable. And a lot of people post all kinds of stuff, everything from photos, which can be content described, captioned, and YouTube videos, you can embed those. So I've seen a wide variety of audiovisual media. I spend a lot of time on Samnet because I find that the kinds of stuff that I'm into is really much all there. I always stop in at YouTube, which is kind of everybody's favorite. And I'm always hunting around and fishing around for good Bookshare and NLS talking books. Web Braille. I also really got onto songs.com, Mike Calvo's recommendation. I got into it because I can listen to just about anything, and I have various choices as to which versions of which songs I can listen to.
Donald, what websites would you like to contribute?
Napster, for one, is real accessible. Now, a paid service where it used to be free, and it's just pretty much an unlimited music selection. BlindMiceMart.com, PodcastAlley.com.
And the first of our two participants from Missouri this evening, Mike Arrigo. What are you doing online?
I am a satellite radio listener. I also like to listen to that online, both XM and Sirius. There is, on the Mac, for the QuickTime player, there's a plugin that you can install. It's called Flip for Mac. It's a Windows Media plugin. It will then allow you to play Windows Media. The XM and Sirius, both of those are Windows Media, actually, and the Mac handles it without a problem.
And also from Missouri, and active on the Main Menu team, keeping that great program and tradition alive, Mr. Jamie Pauls. What is your favorite music site on the internet?
Real Rhapsody fan. I really like it a lot. The thing that I think really sets Rhapsody apart from a lot of other services is the fact that you can stream albums online. So for $12.99 a month, you can listen to as many albums as you want to for as long as you want to. The catalog of material is quite extensive. Rhapsody has really increased its unprotected MP3 files.
And from Australia, we welcome Mr. Scott Rakowski. What are some of your favorite music and radio sites on the internet?
My favorite site at the moment seems to be bigrradio.com, BIGRradio, all one word, .com. Or you can just go to shoutcast.com and type into the search box Big R Radio. You'll find all the streams in the table that comes back. But there's all sorts of different genres there. You've got 80s, 90s, 70s, 60s, 50s. Probably the second favorite site that I like, one that Mike recently added to the directory, 1.fm. They're my other favorite streams that I listen to quite a bit. The 000audio.com is also my favorite at the moment. Plenty of good music to listen to. I really do like listening to streaming radio, especially when it's nice, high-quality 128K streaming. I much prefer the non-stop shoutcast streamings without the commercials and that sort of thing. Yeah, I like the high-quality stuff.
Mike Calvo, glad to see you here this evening. Why don't you tell us about a new app you were telling me about that actually helps you label your music, FineTunes.
FineTunes, it was really cool for me because when I got my iPod, I had a lot of just stuff I had ripped that had incorrect tags in it. And the iPod is real particular about genres and about tagging and all that stuff to organize your music library. So I would like have a various artists or miscellaneous. Finally, with this FineTunes application, I was just able to point it right at my iTunes library. It went through, it labeled everything that I didn't know what it was by getting all the information. And I'm assuming that what it does is it sends up a chunk of the song to their database and compares it and sends back the tags. I guess it actually listens. But then, of course, iTunes comes back through and does its magic and makes the iPod speak the names. I actually have about 800 or 900 songs in my iPod now that I know what they are. The other application that I've really enjoyed using, even though the takeaway player is not real accessible, is Slacker. Kind of a spin on Last.fm and Pandora type of scenario where you tell it the type of music you want to hear based on the artist. So, for example, if you have 10 favorite artists that you like, you can tell it all 10, and it'll restrict a radio station that it creates for you only to those 10 artists. But if you say Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, and Motley Crue, it's going to assume classic rock. Put in other stuff from that type of genre. And that's very cool. And you can do that with Pandora and everything. But what really makes this thing neat is you can buy a rather expensive, I guess, about $199 player that you hook up to your computer via USB, or you can also use it to connect to your wireless network at home. And if you can kind of get your head around the way the menus work and everything, you can take this thing and load it up with music. It's got an 8 gig and a 16 gig version that it loads up with music from this service, and you literally take it away with you. It's a free service once you buy this product. And the way that they subsidize it, of course, is by inserting, you know, little ads here and there within your music. If you want no ads, you can pay, I think it's something like $5.95 or $6.95. There's a pay model, but I don't really care about hearing the advertisements. They don't really bug me that much. There's not a lot of them. The only thing about it I wish is that they would do a little bit better of compression, making their different songs that are at different levels sound better as far as their compression and their normalizing of the audio. But otherwise, they use some form of proprietary type of way for you not to be able to get in there and hack and take all the music away. They have agreements with all the major record labels, so you can get a lot of music for free. And if you're just a music junkie that just wants to listen to all kinds of stuff, that's great. And I really like these options because I don't really care about owning my music. As long as I can rent it for a while, I'm good. There's also a way to listen to United States content from other countries. There are actually free networks that you can log into from another country, and they will then make your IP address appear as if you were here in the US, and you can kind of listen. Now, we're certainly not advocating that people from other countries do that. But if you're an American and you have a subscription to one of these services and you do decide to go abroad, kenradio.com, that's a great podcast, by the way, if you want to have your finger on the pulse of the technology community. I like a lot of the CNET stuff because those guys just believe in having a lot of fun, serious news as well. You've got the Gadgets, which is a great program. It's Molly and the rest of the girl crew over at CNET. I also like Leo Laporte stuff, some of the Twit stuff. I like the Munchcast. Munchcast is like food for geeks. And then the Daily Gizwiz, it's Leo Laporte with the publisher of Mad Magazine. And they get up there and they just have a hilarious time for about 20 minutes every day. And they always talk about some really cool gadgets.
I have to say, I'm kind of depressed that Jonathan Mosen stopped doing the Mosen Explosion. I found it kind of a fun little podcast to listen to. He had a real variety of music. Content that was powered by the listeners. And I thought that was really helpful. You know, they talked everything from blindness consumer advocacy to technology related items to stuff that is interesting to everybody. Of course, I always enjoy listening to Sarah talk, but lately I've been keeping an ear on APH Cool Tech. Another great way to access podcasts is to look at Skype. They have this thing called Skype casting, where you can actually have public conversations live using Skype, and people can tune in and listen to whatever they want to hear. And so if you have a live chat topic you'd like to discuss and make sure it's available to a world audience, that's a good place to do it.
Jedi, you brought up a great thing. As a listener and as a consumer and as a geek, Jonathan is hands down one of the best blind journalists I have ever experienced. I watched Jonathan single-handedly take a group of very inexperienced blind folks. You know, every blind person dreamed of being a DJ when we were a kid for whatever reason. It was one of those things. We all had a couple of tape recorders and a couple of turntables, and we would play DJ. Jonathan took that and turned it into ACB Radio. And as far as I'm concerned, the blindness community really lost a great journalist when Jonathan decided to go work for AT companies. He is an inspiration to me, has been an inspiration to me as a blind person for a number of years as a journalist. The amounts of information that he has acquired in his journalist style, I just can't say enough about what a wonderful reporter he was. I hope for the day that he will be able to get back out here and give us the unbiased information that we once counted on him for. I think that it was a sad day in the blindness community when Jonathan decided to go work for tech companies, because he was truly great at what he does, and I'm sure he's great at what he's doing today. His podcasts over at Freedom are awesome. They're very well put together. Serotech, I really believe when we were the early days of our earlier products, and when we were a small, struggling company trying to get out there and get a name, I believe that single-handedly that was one of the biggest evangelists that this company ever had. I am forever indebted to that man because of his ability to give constructive criticism. The community we've built today was very much encouraged by his energy and by his probing questions, and just by the way that he could take blind people and really get past stuff and just bring us out into saying, you know, this is what we really want. But dude, if you ever hear this, you are truly, truly missed as far as a part of at least my personal listening. And I hope for your return one day.
Just joining us in the room and also just joining our staff this week, Mr. Tom Schill from Florida. So if you need some great tech support, please call us. I'm 6:30 to 10 p.m. Eastern, and Tom will get you taken care of. What is your favorite thing on the internet? Or one of them, anyway?
My favorite podcast is the Serotalk podcast. I think we at Serotech are really setting a milestone and putting together a phenomenally well-done podcast by Mr. Michael, loud and unusually funny.
I just think he's loud and unusual, but we need to do a podcast with your bird back there singing. We got to definitely do that, Michael. We got to get his bird singing. Hallelujah. It's a trip.
I think another site, of course, Blind Cool Tech, all done by blind people. It's certainly all technology related. Of course, I've done four different ones on the Mac, and I'm actually planning on doing some more up there on the GPS navigation. That's going to be my next project, doing some stuff with Mobile Geo and Wayfinder Access, since I have both of them. I'm using Windows less and less, though, admittedly, and the Mac more and more.
Windows sellout. He's a Windows sellout.
I will never sell out completely. Each has its advantages, and people like that actually drive me nuts when they say, well, I'm only going to use this, or I'm only going to use that. And it's like, well, that's your choice, but you're selling yourself short if you don't keep an open mind. Kurzweil 1000 only works in Windows. Each one has its advantages. I use them both for different things. When you say, I'm only going to use this, or I'm only going to use that, you sell yourself short. If you're going to do CD burning in Windows, Nero's the way to go. It's very speech-friendly. It works great with System Access.
I have discovered Windows Media Center, and I'm using an HP Vista machine. So I've got Windows Media Center in here, and if you have like a TV tuner card, for instance, you can access your TV tuner card that way. If you have a DVD, you can play your DVDs using the Windows Media Center interface. And I was really surprised to see how accessible Windows Media Center was with System Access. And with my specific HP model, I have a remote control that I can use. The remote control actually does work to some extent inside of SAMNet, which makes me very happy.
I would say per capita that blind people have an above average fascination with weather, and maybe that's out of necessity, our need to know about the wind or snow or ice and how it affects travel. And we have quite a bit of stuff on the SAMNet, including 160 NOAA weather radio stations, so you can listen to weather throughout the U.S. and a couple feeds from Canada. And also weather forecasts, where you can get a text version of the next 5 to 7 days, as well as the current conditions, all you'd ever want to know. But a lot of people are getting information out texted to their cell phones. Do any of you have any websites for accomplishing that?
Every watch warning from the National Weather Service is on this page, and you can view it by state or by United States, the whole country. Go to weather.gov, then from there click on warnings by state, and then from there you can look at the national one or your own state, and everything that's issued exactly as it's spoken on the weather radio is there.
Though I have to say, I'm really impressed with the SA Mobile Weather Information Service. It's provided very easy and accessible content in terms of knowing the forecast. Also with the advisories and the watches, I've also really appreciated knowing what visibility is out there, knowing what time the sun rises and sets. And I have always found that information to be really helpful.
Just joining us is Mr. Dave McElroy in Visalia, California. Dave, I know you're actively involved in amateur radio, and I believe you found some websites for using other transceivers to talk to other licensed amateur operators, as well as maybe a site or two where those of us non-hams, I was at one point, but let the license expire, but a place where we can actually tune receivers from around the world and hear different markets and countries. So why don't you talk about some of your favorite sites?
I'm a ham radio operator, and so sites that I use for radio will reflect that. One is called globaltuners.com. Subscription is free. You have the opportunity to tune radios in all different parts of the world, depending on who's on and what time. It is aimed at the DXer, but some radios, their antennas are aimed at the VHF, UHF spectrum, the FM spectrum, FMDX, medium wave, short wave. The basic fun of it is you get to listen to a radio receiver in another part of the world from the comfort of your chair and your computer. And you can actually tune the radio. And it's really fun to listen to what people are listening to in New York or Connecticut, Greece. That's a receive only, but I also receive and transmit from a gentleman by the name of Stan Shredder. Go to W4MQ.com, download his program, and actually take control of several amateur radio transceivers, again, around the country and the world. You have to be licensed, general class and above. It gives you the opportunity to operate an HF transceiver when you don't happen to have the ability to have your own antenna. You can operate a big station and have a real blast.
Another great software program, and it works pretty well with speech, too, is Echolink.
Echolink.com for licensed amateurs. All free, other than on W4MQ's site. There are a couple of stations that do ask you to contribute to their operations if you want to use them. You do some fiddling and diddling as a blind user to use them, but they are reasonably workable. Never had a problem with audio feeds. I have found the FM feeds to be fine stereo quality, even the AM and shortwave feeds to be good audio. There's a chat window, and that is accessible. You can actually look at the chat window. People will ask if they can tune, and you can either say yes or no, or they have had a problem with what they call hijacking from time to time. That is not tolerated, and they can usually tell who's causing problems, and those people will be sent away. Some stations you can scan really nicely with, and some you can't. I go to the ones that every blind guy knows, like Bill Sparks, VTuner.com. I am a real fan of Radiolocator.com. I think that is an awesome site. When I do my AMDXing, want to know what's on a particular frequency that I might be hearing, Radio-Locator.com, and my questions are answered. So that's a good site.
I wanted to let Jedi talk about something that she's been doing, the concept of bots, or artificial intelligence.
Pandora has a service called Pandora Bots, and you can actually have one of the ALICE bots of your own. Alice stands for some kind of AI foundation that does all kinds of different neat chatterbot-type things. The chatterbots are so diverse, there's a number of them, and they all have different kinds of abilities, and you can download standalone clients like Verbots and things like that. If you're looking for a fun way to explore an artificial intelligence, that's a good way to go. Right now, I have two online bots. One, which is a Pandora bot, and again, that's utilizing the ALICE engine. It functions based on the keywords you type in, and it tries to find appropriate responses that would work. It's kind of an interesting way to go about it. I'm not really sure how the technology functions. It looks at the keywords that you're using and tries to find a response based on those. And it's a little more human in its ability to kind of guess what you're trying to talk about, but sometimes you get really weird responses. The more consistent responses that I have found from a chatbot called Alan, that's the name of the original chatbot software, but you can actually create your own chatbot using the Alan software. That, I think, has more consistent responses, but they do have more canned responses and a little less fluid. You can also go to Verbots, verbots.com, if you're interested in downloading a Verbot or an artificial intelligence to your computer. Teach people and use various kinds of what they call knowledge bases, which are basically scripts to tell the computer what to say. But those are kind of limited in the sense that they don't seem to respond to things that are outside of the particular knowledge base that you're dealing with. And a knowledge base being, for instance, if we had a Serotech Verbot, the Serotech Vbot would know how to respond to questions related to system access in Serotech. If you, for instance, asked it about blind Cooltech, it would have no idea what you're talking about, and it would say so, unless the programmer actually put that information and made that information available to the Verbot. So that's kind of the limitation. Depending on the kind of Verbot and the kind of intelligence pattern recognition it uses, you can get it to learn and understand certain things. It's kind of an interesting form of entertainment. If you Google chatterbots or use the SA Mobile search engine to Google chatterbots, there are a couple of web pages that will help you get in touch with the various kinds of artificial intelligences that are out there. You can actually download one called HAL. It's a personal assistant that you can have run certain programs for you, and actually you can get Verbots that will do the same thing. But it uses speech recognition that's currently downloaded onto your computer. So like, for instance, if you had Windows speech recognition, and some actually come with their own standalone speech recognition products, but you can, for instance, get it to run your email client for you or check certain things on the internet like the weather and certain podcasts and that kind of thing. And those are really good for people with more accessibility needs than just screen reading software. If you have a Verbot on the Serotech website and you can make it as nice and professional looking human, make it just completely wacky. But it would say, for instance, welcome to Serotech. Please type your query here. And you would type in your question and it would search the Serotech site. So it's kind of a nice, sophisticated and interactive site search engine. Actually, I was thinking how cool it would be to automate SAMNet, where you can tell it, look for the Serotalk podcast, and it will do that.
We are going to conclude with some websites for music and radio stations. Again, I'm going to read some, but not all. If you want all of them, we hope that you will go regularly back to Serotalk.com. All links to items that we mention. More than that, we will be posting news, especially in 2009, of current events. So we want to be your portal for information as well as entertainment. Music sites, we'll start with Pandora.com. We were the first and still primary screen reading technology to access that, just like it sounds, Pandora.com. Build a radio station with the types of music you like. Very intelligent technology, so you start by naming some groups that you like. And then it makes suggestions, and you do thumbs up on the ones you like, thumbs down on the ones you don't. And eventually their artificial intelligence will ultimately create a radio station about 99% accurate as far as predicting your tastes. Very cool. One that Mike Calvo really likes, Slacker.com. Again, he described it earlier, so I won't go into great detail there, but give that one a play. Another one that reminds me a lot of Pandora is Last.fm. For example, I put about 10 of my favorite groups in there, and then it suggests what they call radio station, so it's named after a group. So, for example, the Earth, Wind, and Fire station would play a few songs from that band, but also others that are similar in style. One that Jedi mentioned that is very cool called Songza. I'll spell that one, songza.com. Again, this is one where you listen to one song at a time, but you can actually choose that song, where the other stations generally are making suggestions. You type in the song artist that you're looking for, it gives you a list. And a lot of times there's different versions, so maybe you want to hear a studio version, a live version. I've heard karaoke versions or crazy versions of people singing in their hotel room, but a cool site to play with. Here's one I just found, but really like. It's called theradio.com. And what they have are a variety of stations
This one you can actually move to the next track, and it seems unlimited, where some of the others have the limitation of 6 per hour. So one of the Java buttons is a next button. So you choose a type of music, again, 70s, 80s, rock, whatever. Then if you don't like the song, you keep pressing the space bar for the next button. Listen to the songs you do like, just like it sounds, the radio.com. For music sites where you can listen to and purchase music, some of the top ones listed here this evening were Napster, NAPSTER.com, and of course, Jamie's favorite, Rhapsody, RAPSODY.com. For radio, one of the first ones is BillSparks.org. I would have to say for the USA, Bill is number one in terms of the number of working radio feeds. Now, he also has some links in Canada, and he'll be expanding that as well as Australia and the United Kingdom. And I will say that Samnet is a very close second, but I have to give kudos and tip my hat to Bill, who has the number one portal for working U.S. radio stations. Just like it sounds, BillSparks.org. Now, a lot of us like technology, so here's four great websites for that. The first one, many of you know, specifically blindness, low vision related, blindcooltech.com. And all contributions are from blind and visually impaired folks. Of course, they have an RSS feed, so you can subscribe and get every podcast as it's issued, or you may just want to go to the website and choose the ones of interest. But a lot of good stuff there. I've learned about many things from that website. Three, mainstream technology, meaning of interest to all people. Leo Laporte's twit.tv. Twit stands for This Week in Tech, so go to twit.tv. CNET has a lot of cool stuff, many podcasts. My favorite one is called Buzz Out Loud at bol.cnet.com, just like it sounds. The letter C, like Charlie, net.com. One that a gentleman I used to work with, you may remember a show called Handy Talk, and I worked with a gentleman by the name of Ken Rakowski, and his website is kenradio.com. It is kind of for the insiders, so that is a turnoff to some people, but he does have a lot of good tech stories and gives a little insight and perspective and sometimes explains things, so it is kind of educational as well, so you might like that. For satellite radio, Mike had mentioned, of course, XM.com, X-Ray Mike, and of course, Sirius, spelled S-I-R-I-U-S. And of course, Sirius now owns XM, so it's referred to as Sirius XM. But either of those portals, if you want to subscribe and listen to those radio stations. On the amateur radio front, the one I'm definitely going to play with after I finish this podcast, GlobalTuners.com, where we can actually control radio receivers in different parts of the world. So that's going to be cool to listen to other places, especially outside of the USA, where they still value radio and have live DJs and have fun. Certainly the whole world will never stagnate like the US. Well, maybe someday things will reverse. We can only hope. And two specific sites for amateur radio operators, you must be licensed, general class or above. First, echolink.com, just like it sounds, and W4MQ.com. It's W4MicQuebec.com. Going back to radio here, below BillSparks.org and Samnet, we have a few like VTuner.com. V is in virtual, VTuner.com. What they do that's unique at radio-locator.com. Basically, if you're going to a market or maybe a new radio station in your area, you can basically say, I want to know all the radio stations that I could pick up if I happen to be in Orlando. A few websites that are online, so they are radio stations, but they are internet only and generally sound better as a result, usually having a little higher quality than those broadcasting, usually higher quality. Shoutcast.com, like it sounds, shoutcast.com. And here's some that we have on the System Access mobile network, so you need not have to fish around. We got direct links. 181.fm, 1.fm, 977music.com, and sky.fm. Now, a few others that I heard mentioned on ACB Radio that I have not played with yet. Blip.fm, that's blip.fm, and streamingradioguide.com. Of course, one we'll be reviewing in greater detail for you, iTunes.com. Not only can you buy music, you can listen to it. You got radio stations. You can rent movies. You can buy individual TV episodes or complete series or at least a season or year of a particular show that you really like. And we will wrap up here with some podcasts. Again, iTunes is a great resource if you want to install the iTunes player, which also installs QuickTime. It is a little top-heavy, so if you have a really slow computer or if you really don't think you're interested in what they have to offer, you might want to consider approaching it in a different way. PodcastAlley.com, there's over 50,000 podcasts there, including good old Serotalk. In fact, just in the technology category, there's 4,285. Now, if you're interested, we will do some reviews on players. I was going to do one this episode, but I'm waiting for the next release in January. It's called Klango, very interesting, kind of a social networking tool. It does more than just an audio player, but the audio player does some very unique things, so I do want to review that for you. But of course, Winamp's also popular. There's Windows Media 11, not only listening to audio, but some people use it for creating CDs, which can also be done with Winamp, by the way. There's one player called SpeakOn that gives you a portal to using Last.fm without going to the website. Tool that I like that, unfortunately, System Access is not the best at handling as of today, but all things change in this company and very quickly, is Screamer Radio, screamer-radio.net. Interesting little player that you can actually record anything you're listening to, and if they are streaming titles, meaning showing you the current artist and song being played, every time that changes, it'll create a new file. Some tools for listening to DVDs, one of my favorites, the best, is DVD Audio Extractor, because not only can you rip the sound out into an MP3 or other formats for your listening pleasure, maybe to copy on your Nano or Victor, but it just does the best job at navigating the menus and helping you to find all of the hidden material that a lot of DVDs contain. There are some other options. There's something called VLC Media Player. Unfortunately, the latest versions are not as accessible as they were in the past. Another interesting player is called Real Alternatives. So if you want to be able to listen to real audio content, I'd rather have you come over to Samnet. But if you opt not to do that, you can get Real Alternative. And the reason they call it Real Alternative is it is an alternative to downloading the very bloaty and top-heavy Real One player that's out there. So there's just a few things. Believe me, if you want us to review players, if you want us to show you how to navigate some of the websites, we want to hear from you. 2009 is going to be the year where those who take the time and send us an email to resources@serotalk.com or who call the Blab line at 866-997-BLAB or 2522, you are the ones who will be controlling what great content we broadcast and prepare in 2009. We got some very exciting announcements, including one for the end of January. So we thank you for participating and listening to the first four episodes, and I trust that we will only get better as time goes on.
Give us your 2 cents right now.
Scott Kowski here. Wanted to know if Mike could do a review of the Tassimo coffee maker so we could all have the convenience of knowing how it works. That sort of information would be very, very cool.
Okay, Mr. Rutkowski, you asked for it. You've got it. I am now in the Calvo kitchen, and I am in front of my Bosch Tassimo coffee maker here. And I'm going to do a very short demonstration today. We are going to make one of my favorites. Ricky says it's her favorite, but she just got one, so I had it first. So na-na-na-na-na-na. And what I'm going to make today is a chocolate mocha, and that consists of an espresso. And there are several different espressos available. I personally like the Carte Noire espresso. I hope I'm pronouncing it right, for those of you who are checking my pronunciation. And then the chocolate. There's a hot chocolate that's available for the Tassimo. Now, the thing that makes the Tassimo so cool, of course, is you have these little discs. See? Little discs. And the way that they work is you can take the disc, and it's kind of round, and it's got a little tab on one side. And on the front of the coffee maker, there's a little lift that you lift up, and you open it. It's like a little hood. And then in there, there's a place where the disc fits. It only fits in one direction here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my espresso disc and put it in here. And then under it, if you feel right under where it goes, you can feel that there's a little puncture thing that is where the coffee comes through. And then there's a little window there, which is what the Bosch uses to read these discs. The Bosch is one of the quieter Tassimo machines. The original one was pretty loud, but it still made excellent coffee. This one is much quieter and it's quicker. And you'll see what I mean. I have not closed the lid on purpose yet so that I can demonstrate just how quick it takes from the time you close the lid and it's ready to go between the time that you actually get something out of the disc. And then I'm going to take this disc out, put in the chocolate disc, and immediately it's going to start making my hot chocolate and then pouring it into the cup that I have here. So without further ado, I'm going to pull out on the bottom of the Bosch here in the front. There's a place to set your coffee cup on top of. It has a little twist that you can turn like that, and it will then raise the little platform up a bit so you can put an espresso cup up there and make your espresso. If you were making individual espresso, you just run in here, throw your espresso cup on top of this, put your disc in there, push the button, and away you go. But since we're not doing that, we're making a mixed drink. I have a coffee mug here that I like to use. It's one of these canister types. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to set it here underneath the spigot, and I'm going to close the top, and I'm going to immediately push the button. Now what it's doing here is it's just warming up the coffee. It's just kind of moistening it. And there we go. It is now making the actual espresso. And that's it. And the little noise you hear, the little thunk, thunk, thunk noises, what you're actually hearing is the coffee maker just kind of releasing its pressure. And you can be patient and wait for it to stop thunking. And at that point, you know, you don't possibly risk getting burned or anything like that. But you could be impatient like me and just remove it. And it's a little warm to the touch, but we just drop it on the countertop here. And then we immediately put the next disc in there, close it, push the button, and there you go. So you see that it, the way that it makes coffee is really amazing because it's very quick. And now it's pouring a little bit. Oh, smell that chocolate. I love it. I love it. And the cool thing is here that it's all the milk and everything is right in the little canister, and you can store them on your shelf. You don't need to keep them in the cold. And you can pick this stuff up at Target or Bed Bath & Beyond or whatever. Oh, listen to that. For a nice cold winter afternoon, this is awesome. Now it's thunking again. I'll let it thunk out this time. And all it's doing is it's just releasing a little pressure. That's it. It's done. I can take this one out. And it is empty now. Then I come over here. I take my little coffee mug out. I'm going to put the cover back, the little platform back on the machine. And there's only one way, again, that it can go. And it'll fit in here if I could figure it out. Come on now. There we go. Don't embarrass me on podcast. Okay. And the last but not least, I'm going to add to this, and this is optional, is I have here a bottle of peppermint flavoring from Starbucks, which is my favorite to make a peppermint mocha. So I hold the little spigot over, and I do one, two, and that is it. Take my little cover, put it on my mug, and let's see. If you want sugar, you can add sugar, but really the hot chocolate is sweet enough as it is. Simply delicious. Yummy, yummy. So there you go, the Serotalk podcast. Not only do we tell you about great, cool, geeky stuff, but we also tell you how to make an awesome cup of coffee using the Bosch Tassimo coffee maker. Thanks for the request, Scott, and enjoy your coffee.
What do you want to hear in the next podcast? Call 866-997-GLAM-2522.
Have a great holiday season.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.